This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
We just have time for part of my talk with Nicholas Reese from UNICEF. Danger in the air, how air pollution can affect brain development in young children. That is from UNICEF, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. We have Nicholas Reese on the line, the policy advocacy specialist who wrote the report. Nicholas, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
You put out this report from UNICEF at the end of 2017, I believe, but the public still doesn't know that our exhaust pipe gas can hurt babies' brains in ways that could damage them for life, and that seems very serious. Is that based on relatively new science coming out behind this report?
Yeah, it's based on this, on a growing body of science on this, but it isn't all just absolutely new. I mean, we knew that when air pollution had lead in it, for example, in many parts of the world through the 70s and early 80s, we knew about it then, and the public and policymakers acted decisively when they found out the negative implications of lead in the air and in gasoline and how it could affect children's brains. More and more research now is surfacing over the last few years about how other types of pollutants, including a lot of the air pollution that we breathe now, could also actually have implications for children's cognitive development as well. And so it is a growing body of evidence, and it is increasingly, we're seeing more and more research coming out on this. And I think it's just a matter of time before we begin to ask ourselves the same questions that we asked ourselves in the past, is, okay, enough is enough. This is pretty horrible, and we have to stop the negative implications of air pollution on children's brains.
Well, you've got three clear pathways of how this can get into our brains in your report, and I'd like to just take them step by step. And the first is something called neuroinflammation. Could you tell us what that is and why that has anything to do with air pollution?
Basically, a lot of the particles, the most dangerous of air pollution particles are the really, really small ones. These are measured at 2.5 microns in diameter, to give you a sense, about a 30th of the width of a human hair in size. So it's extremely small. It's these really small particles that enter the lungs, and because they're so small, they can also enter the bloodstream and travel up to the brain, where studies are showing that these really small particles can damage the blood-brain barrier, which is essentially a thin, delicate membrane that protects the brain from toxic substances. So, and then in this damage can cause this neuroinflammation. Studies are also pointing to the effects of that neuroinflammation on impaired cognitive development and also even linking it to diseases that affect older populations, such as Alzheimer's.
And the second route for smog to get to the brain really seemed strange to me. It appears that pollution can reach our brains directly through our nose. How does that work?
That's through the olfactory nerve, that's basically located just very close to the brain and through the nasal passage. If certain substances can get through that dimension, and studies are showing that it can reach the brain through that passageway as well.
And I had to look up one of the substances mentioned in the report, magnetite, the most magnetic material on Earth, and then how nanoparticles, as you described, very small particles of magnetite can work in the brain. So I go on to Google, and the first search shows that there's optimism that drugs could be injected with magnetite, and that would allow doctors to steer medicine to specific spots with a magnet. But according to your report, there's also a real downside of having more and more tiny magnetic bits entering our brains, and it looks like they come even from the operation of the motors in our cars and trucks. How do we know that the magnetite from pollution getting into our heads is from those sources, those industrial sources, rather than the natural magnetite that is found on Earth?
Well, a lot of studies have looked at areas where magnetite is highly present in the air, in urban environments where there's a lot of traffic and where there's a lot of industrial pollution. They've demonstrated that populations in those who are exposed to the air in those areas have higher concentrations of magnetite in their body. And this basically creates oxidative stress, in some similar ways that, as I was describing earlier, with lead, these are heavy metals in the air. They have similar effects on brain tissue and neurodegeneration.
The third pollutant that's mentioned in the report there I know pretty well. In the early 1990s, I researched polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs. I know that fossil fuel combustion produces PAHs, and so, by the way, do forest fires. But is there a way to describe to a general audience what these substances are?
It's a specific class of pollutant, and it is mostly, it's linked with automobile traffic. Just taking a quick step back here, pollution is a very tricky thing to evaluate the effects of because there are so many different types of particles. There's, as you say, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, there's magnetite, and then there's even just particulate matter that is not necessarily, it's just very, very, very small. So there's so many different types of pollutants, and it's very hard. One of the big challenges here, and also I think why we're seeing such a growing body of research on the link between air pollution and brain development, has been trying to disentangle how different types of pollutants affect people in different ways. And now the science is getting better and better, and our methods are getting better and better, and the technology is getting better and better, which is allowing us to disentangle the effects of certain types of pollutants. So as we mentioned, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are a particular type of pollution. It's really just one of the PM2.5s, which is really just referring to a size of particle. It's a specific type of pollutant, which is really comes from a lot of the fossil fuel combustion and, you know, essentially fossil fuel combustion and industrial fuel pollution. So, you know, I think one of the big challenges has been disentangling these, but now we're starting to be able to do it. And studies are showing with polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that it's contributing to a loss of white matter in the brain. And white matter essentially contains nerve fibers that are critical for helping neurons in one part of the brain communicate with neurons in the other in other parts of the brain. And it's this communication and the rapid level of communication that allows brains to develop and form, especially in very, very young children.
Right. The first, what is it, 3 months of a child's life, of a baby's life, is the most critical for the formation of the brain. Is that right?
Absolutely. Those first 1,000 days are absolutely critical to a child's future. During that time, it's essentially a critical window of brain development where neural connections are made, and then those neural connections replicate over and over throughout a child's life. And so disruptions during those first 1,000 days can have long-lasting effects on a child's brain development.
Where are the most people being affected by the worst air?
What we did was we looked at some NASA maps that measure air pollution annually around the world. And as one can expect, the highest levels of air pollution we're seeing in South Asia and East Asia. And that includes extremely high levels of numbers of kids affected. But I do want to just point out, though, that that is outdoor air pollution. And there are huge numbers of kids living in other parts of the world where solid fuels are burned inside homes. And so that does not account for the levels of exposure that young people, that young kids might be exposed to, and parents as well, who are living in homes where solid fuels are used for cooking and heating. And the levels of air pollution in the kitchen, for example, can be just as high, if not even higher, than some of the most polluted cities in the world. And so we really have to, when we think about air pollution, it's obviously there are some of the cities in the world where pollution is really high a lot of the time, and that needs to be addressed. But we also need to think about the microenvironment where children live and their exposure to indoor cooking in a way that where improper ventilation prevents air pollution from escaping the room where a kid may be.
And then we have another new study published in August 2018, this one by Chinese academics, and the title is The Impact of Exposure to Air Pollution on Cognitive Performance. And as a writer named Kevin Loria said in the World Economic Forum, this study found, and I'll quote him here, chronic exposure to air pollution appears to cause detrimental effects on cognition that get worse throughout life, potentially increasing risk factors for degenerative diseases like dementia and Alzheimer's. And that's basically what you were finding in your report, is it not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and this is yet another, and, you know, we published this report about a year ago, but it was since then we've just seen studies like these more and more coming out, which are pointing to these links between air pollution and cognitive development. And this is very much in line with the growth of literature that we're seeing on this topic. And so, as I said at the beginning, you know, at what point is enough enough? At what point do we have to say this is posing a considerable risk to our children and their futures, and their ability to learn and reach their full potential? And at what point are we going to say that we need to really do something about this? You know, air pollution has made a lot of links between high levels of exposure and risks to child survival. We've known this for a long time. We're increasingly seeing this growing body of evidence affecting their potential learning and so forth. We're not going to be successful in preventing child death and improving their potential in the future if we don't address environmental risks.
I totally agree, but I do see this caution that isn't your report talking about an increasing percentage of damaged kids rather than all kids? I mean, pollution, does it hurt everyone, or can we still see a lot of healthy people and very intelligent people coming from highly polluted areas?
Oh, of course. We're not saying that an exposure, you know, if you live in a polluted city, that is an absolute, you're not going to, you know, we're saying that there's growing body of evidence that it is affecting the full performance or the full potential of brain development. That's not to say that you're not going to get very smart kids growing up in potentially highly polluted areas. That's definitely, but the risks are there, and everyone from parents to policymakers needs to know those risks and to do what they can to prevent exposure. You know, we're not saying leave the city, but you can do what you can to prevent exposure even if you live in highly polluted cities. Make sure that even planning when you travel during the day can help reduce exposure when you're outside at high levels of pollution, because you want to minimize all the negative implications that could possibly affect kids, even if we're not talking about a major impact on cognitive development. We are talking about studies showing links between these issues.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@eagleshock.org. That's radio@eagleshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Nicholas Reese, Policy Advocacy Specialist for UNICEF. We're talking about how combustion engines and our industrial society can make some of us sick right from the start of life. I wonder, is it fair, Nicholas, to compare fossil-powered air pollution to smoking cigarettes? Adult can decide to become more healthy and quit smoking, but, you know, a baby can't really defend themselves, and if their brains are not developed well in those first 1,000 days, that doesn't happen later. So we have to, as a society, defend our babies. I mean, that's just so basic, and yet we're not doing it, really.
Right, absolutely. We have to, at a certain point, decide that we need to act on this because it's clearly becoming too much of a risk.
And we've been talking about a report, Danger in the Air, How Air Pollution Can Affect Brain Development in Young Children. You can find links for this free report and the science behind it in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Thank you so much for telling us about this, Nick.
Thank you, Alex. Pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Once again, we are all out of time. Tune in again next week for more Radio EcoShock.